Welcome to BritishHeritage.com. In our next three podcasts, Amy Griggs will be in conversation with Melanie Unwin and Mary Takianagi, curators of the Voice and Vote exhibition in Westminster Hall. Learn how to sign up for your free visit to the exhibit and experience what Parliament was like for the first brave women who broke with convention and listened to parliamentary debates from a ventilator in the attic, no less. This segment is the first installment of our coverage of Voice and Vote.
Hi, this is Amy Griggs from British Heritage Travel Magazine, and here at BritishHeritage.com, we have the pleasure of being with two lovely ladies from Parliament once again, Melanie Unwin, the Deputy Curator of the Art Collection at Parliament, and Mary Takianagi, the Senior Archivist at the Houses of Parliament.
Hello, Amy.
Hello. Hi. Good to see you again.
And you.
Lovely to see you too.
Well, once again, we're talking about the interesting things going on around the Vote 100 celebration. The exhibit is called Voice and Vote, Women's Place in Parliament. And this is part of the Vote 100 project. Is that correct?
It is. Parliament's doing all sorts of activities this year. But for Mari and I, it's the exhibition that's been our baby for the last 4 years. And
yes.
Now we're here.
And now this big exhibition in the summer culminates in many ways what you've been doing. But you'll continue all year to have the tours, the special tours and the special activities. Is that right?
Absolutely.
There'll be all sorts of things going on all year. Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so anytime you're visiting.
Oh, absolutely.
There'll be Vote 100 things to see and do.
There will.
Okay, now this particular exhibit, Voice and Vote, takes place at what dates?
It's open from the 27th of June to the 6th of October 2018, right in the Houses of Parliament in the heart of London in Westminster.
And how do you enter? Do you have to go through security? Do you pay an entry fee?
There's no entry fee. It's a free exhibition, but you do have to pre-book online first. So if you go to the parliamentary website, parliament.uk, look up visiting and you'll find you can pre-book the tickets and then you come along. Yes, absolutely. You go through security. Everybody comes into Parliament, whether you're going to a select committee or an exhibition, goes through a security check. But it's no worse than an airport.
Right. And this is going to be in the main part of Westminster Hall.
Yes, Westminster Hall, which is the oldest part of Parliament, nearly 1,000 years old, built by William Rufus with the most magnificent hammer beam roof. And our exhibition will take up, you know, a corner of it. But it's a pretty hefty exhibition. It'll take up maybe a quarter of the floor space. You won't be able to miss it anyway once you walk in.
Oh, this is going to be exciting. Okay, so once you book your space online,
yes,
you just show up at the appointed time. But before we do that, with Melanie and Mary, I would just like to know, with your backgrounds in art curation, archivists' work at various other institutions as well, why did you raise your hand for this exhibit? I mean, you have a day job. This is a lot of work. So what made you want to do this?
Well, because I normally work with the art collection and I'm an art curator, we have not as many portraits of women MPs in the collection as we'd like compared with men, because obviously we've had male MPs for hundreds and hundreds of years and women MPs only for 100 years. And so it's been one of the things that Parliament's been very keen on is that we get more women represented in the art collection. So I'm very interested in the history of women in Parliament. And we've seen this anniversary coming towards us for quite a long time now. I've been wondering what we should do, haven't we?
We certainly have. Yes, so 10 years ago in 2008, we marked 50 years of women in the House of Lords. And at that point, it became apparent that, you know, we were just 10 years off the anniversary of the vote. And so really, we've been counting down for the last 10 years. I've always been interested in women's history as an archivist and historian by background. I've always been interested in the women in the archives. The Parliamentary Archives, just like the art collection, has been keen to increase the representation of women amongst its papers. And so it's all come together really nicely in the run-up to 2018.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. So it was a general interest in having not such a totally male representation in the building.
Absolutely. And I think really important, you know, women
Very
are
important.
Voters, women are MPs. We all work in that building. We need to know about the women who have come before us.
Right. I think it's and their fight and their struggle.
And their fight, exactly.
Yes.
And see their images on the wall. Otherwise, you know, we just have a masculine environment. I think it's very off-putting.
And we're working toward, we, by that I mean you, we're working in the US as well toward it, but you're really targeting a 50-50 representation, aren't you?
It's a big campaign in this country. I mean, yes, that's absolutely what we're looking for.
50% men, 50% women.
That's right. So, yes, that's what we hope for.
Some way to go,
Some way to go, yes.
Well, we have a long way to go, too. But I don't know that there's a campaign with a name to it that gives it such good articulation as we're going for 50-50. So I wanted to be sure and mention that today because that is a lofty goal.
Hopefully, like suffrage, it will be exported to America from us.
Hopefully. Okay, let's get on to the Voice and Vote exhibition. It will be divided into four parts, which are, let me just list them and then we'll go into them. The ventilation.
Ventilator.
Okay. The cage. The tomb. And the chambers, correct? Okay, explain to me, ventilator.
The ventilator is this is really hard to believe today, but before 1834, when there was a fire that destroyed the building, in the building that existed before 1834, where Parliament's home then, women were not allowed to sit in the visitors' galleries, in the public galleries, to watch debates in the House of Commons. They were interested. They wanted to hear what the MPs were talking about. Clearly, it was their lives that were being affected. And they found their way up to an attic above the House of Commons chamber, where they could look down through a grill in the ceiling and hear the voices coming up. Now, that grill was actually a ventilator. It was to ventilate all the fumes from the chamber.
Oh, my gosh.
And we have to think about how keen they must have been, because those fumes, you know, this is a time before electricity. This is candlelight and oil light. Remember, the house predominantly sat in the evening then. It would have been really hot and really smelly. And yet they came, they found their way up there as an unofficial space because they were so keen to listen to the debates and what was going on.
And how large is the space?
It's an attic. It wasn't the whole attic. So there are reports of there sort of being 20, 30 people, women up there on busy days. But I think on the whole, they kept it down to 20, didn't they?
So you had to stand up.
There were only eight seats.
There were only eight
seats. Because there was an octagonal structure in the middle, you see, of the ventilator. Mm-hmm. And they put holes in it so that women could put their, they put holes in it for the ventilator, but then what women ended up doing was putting their heads through the hole and looking down. And there were eight spaces for that. And contemporary depictions of it that we have, that we've got three illustrations of it, which are going to be in the Voice and Vote exhibition. And they show women standing up or sitting down and putting their heads through the holes to look down into the House of Commons chamber below. And our exhibition will recreate a half ventilator shape with holes. So you too can put your head through a hole, look down, and we'll give you some idea about what the House of Commons would have looked like underneath, the view that women would have had. And we'll play some historic debates of the time so you can get an idea about what it would have sounded like. And so hopefully you can really immerse yourself, as far as we can tell, you know, today in the experience that these women would have had. And we're working with the University of York, who have done an acoustic model of the ventilator space. And so they're going to run the recordings through the model. And then hopefully we really will be able to get as realistic an idea as we possibly can of the sound that the women would have heard.
Oh, my gosh. They must have been keen to wind their way up there. And very few at a time could go. And you had to take turns putting your head through a hole, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I'm really glad that we don't have to do that anymore. And the known pictures that you're talking about will be on display, for the first time ever.
Yes, so there are three pictures. There's one from the Parliamentary Art Collection, a pencil drawing, which shows it's from the outside.
I believe that's on the website, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It is. Then there are two pictures which haven't been previously displayed or on the web or put anywhere before. One of them is from Westminster City Archives, which is a painting also showing the ventilator from the outside, women illuminated with sort of light coming up through the chamber standing around the octagon, which is very atmospheric and gives you an idea about what it would have felt like. And then extremely exciting, there's a picture of the ventilator as viewed from the inside looking down, which is belongs to the National Trust and is coming to us from the Shakespeare Birthplace Trust in Stratford-upon-Avon. And this was discovered on Twitter a couple of years ago.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, a researcher who was doing research in the Shakespeare Birthplace Trust was photographing lots of items from a commonplace book, like a scrapbook kept by a young woman who lived at a local National Trust property. And much later on, he was going through all his photos, found this one, and thought, maybe that's the House of Commons. So he put the image on Twitter, and fortunately, someone spotted it who knew enough to say, yes, that's the ventilator. It's the most beautiful watercolour drawing. It was done by a very young woman called Georgiana Chatterton, and we'll be very privileged to have it on display.
This is fascinating. Okay, and during this time, in each of these rooms, you are also highlighting some of the actual people that lived in those years. So the ventilator would have been used during what years?
The earliest recorded use of it we've got at the moment is around about 1818. And then, of course, it was destroyed in the fire in 1834. So that first space covers that period.
Okay, so that's the period. And one of the very active and very interesting women was Elizabeth Fry.
Absolutely. Now, she is certainly one of the first women to use the ventilator, and she might be the first woman to use it. Elizabeth Fry, of course, was a campaigner for prison reform and women's prison conditions particularly.
And I noticed she's a Quaker.
She is indeed
a Quaker. And one of our very important suffragists in the U.S. was Alice Paul, who actually penned the Equal Rights Amendment, which we still have not passed. She was also raised a Quaker.
Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting. From what I can understand of Alice Paul's upbringing, they were brought up on a much more equal footing, men and women.
Absolutely. I mean, Elizabeth Fry was a Quaker minister, so women were allowed to be ministers in the Quaker Church
at that point. To get a very high level of education.
Absolutely. And worked alongside Quaker men as well in things like the abolition of the slave trade. Quaker women were very important in that campaign. But Elizabeth Fry is, I think, most well-known as a prison reformer. And she was really an expert. You know, she gave all sorts of information, both to MPs and to committees looking into prison reform. So she was very influential. And I think what we have to remember is that women may not have had the vote, they may not have had formal political power, but they were very influential. They did do research, they did campaign, and they did get changed. And can we imagine how much more they'd have achieved if they'd actually had the vote and more political power?
Yes.
But having informed all sorts of people about the conditions of women in prisons and
children,
absolutely, and indeed men, and visited, you know, became what, you know, we would absolutely recognise as an expert today. Obviously, when the House of Commons came to debate it, she wanted to listen to the debate and she wasn't allowed to. And we know that, you know, she made her way up there. Now, it's almost certain that a male MP said, there is a space up in the attic, you can come and listen, but you have to be absolutely silent. And so she'd have made her way up there through a number of staircases. I mean, the route was fairly difficult, and got up there and sat there and listened. But isn't that extraordinary?
But not participating.
Not participating. And, you know, hearing all her evidence.
Oh, my gosh.
Being discussed down there.
And is it true that she did at one point get to present to a committee or to part of Parliament? She was the first woman to be able to do that, I believe, in 1818.
I don't think we can be sure that she was the first, but she would have been very early.
Very early. One of the first.
Yes.
To actually be listened to.
Yes.
Not by the whole Parliament, by a committee or by the
committee
whole.
And a committee.
By committee. Right. Okay. Certainly not everybody. And another interesting fact about her that I'm think this is true. She also worked as a Quaker woman with nursing schools and was a big influencer on Florence Nightingale.
I think you've been doing your research.
We're also interested in Florence Nightingale's work, but I think she also touched that little part of history as well.
I think rather like lots of people in the 19th century, they seem to get an awful lot more done than we do today, don't they? They seem to.
It's because they're not always on the phone.
Yeah, that's right. Or on Twitter.
Exactly. But we want you to join us on Twitter.
We do. Absolutely.
Okay. So also in that year, I just want to touch quickly on one other woman that I find fascinating and that we will definitely be showcasing in Wednesday's Women, and I believe there's information on your website as well about her. Caroline Norton had a horrible experience with a horrible husband who took her children away from her. Is that correct?
Yes. So again, it's one of those things that sounds difficult to believe today, but women didn't have any formal rights over their own children 200 years ago. Parental authority was vested in the father. And so a woman could have a child, and even a very young baby could be just taken away from her by the father if he so desired, and she would have no rights whatsoever. And this is basically what happened to Caroline Norton, who had a very messy separation from her husband, who took their young sons away and refused her access to them. But because she was a determined woman and a campaigner and she was well connected, she started a campaign to have the law changed. And it's thanks to her that the Custody of Infants Act was passed finally in 1839, following many years of campaigning. And this gave women some rights over young children for the first time. It was a very long time before women got equal guardianship. Not until the 20th century.
Yeah.
But these campaigns have to start somewhere.
Yes.
And it's
now, but she had to be an upper class class woman to be able to start this. Is that correct?
Yes, because you needed connections. You needed to know the MPs, because this is what we were just saying, the difference between informal power and formal power. So she couldn't be elected herself. She couldn't directly sort of stand up and argue for it in the House of Commons. She had to influence the lawmakers who did. But she did so, you know, very successfully. And it's arguable that the Custody of Infants Act is the first piece of feminist legislation. It's certainly a very early piece of legislation, specifically designed to improve the position of women in society. And it was followed with other legislative achievements, because she went on to campaign successfully for the Matrimonial Causes Act of 1857, which gave women more rights in divorces. Mm-hmm. So her influence lived on, because you can also see her influence in the Married Women's Property Act, which was passed later. Yes, which she may not have directly campaigned for, but certainly her experience helped inform the changes around that.
Next time, Melanie, Mary, and Amy will discuss the controversial cage, a space designated for women's use between 1834 and 1917. Listen and experience these crucial years in the fight for women's suffrage, and join British Heritage Travel on Facebook every Wednesday for Wednesday's Women, where we share an outstanding, inspirational woman story every week. Till next time, thanks for listening.